WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to the 10 o'clock hour of Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. Certified financial planner here to take your calls, your questions, navigate what has been a volatile market. Those are the words we've been using. Volatile, violent, dreadful, worst. Those are the headlines. Listen, the world's not ending. We have had a rough start to the year. Down 6% on the Dow, was over 1,000 points this week. Unsettling, yes, of course. Nobody likes to see the market go down. If you're 40 or 35 or 45, you should celebrate when this happens. This is the time you should be buying. If you have a 401k, you're just putting money in every month, buying regardless of where prices are. You're a lot better off in the long run with these big dips so that you can buy in, as opposed to the market kind of treading water at a right at a peak or a high or a plateau. This is when you make money, is when you're able to buy when the markets go on sale. It's that simple. Mathematically, you can't argue with it. Doesn't feel good. You'd much rather open up your Fidelity account or your Schwab account and look at all of your positions and see them in the green than see them in the red. No question about it. But over time, mathematically, we're better off with these dips as long as we continue to invest. And ultimately, the economy gets back on better footing than it is today. Companies within the S&P 500 or around the globe continue to grow their earnings. We recover. And that's the story over and over again. But it's a long, arduous journey that we're on, and it's not easy. It's highly emotional. Those emotions cause investors over and over to make mistakes, because investors very often operate out of fear. Ask an investor, do they have a high risk tolerance? Let's say 5 out of 10 investors say, yes, I have a good tolerance for risk. I have a good investment risk tolerance. What they really often mean when they say, hey, I have a high risk tolerance, is that I have a high risk tolerance for making money, not losing. You go through weeks like this, how many people lose their high risk tolerance when it's going in the other direction? It happens a lot. And that's the emotional part of, it's the emotional froth that makes investing so difficult. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. You can also call me right here this morning, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're here to talk through what's happening in the world, how it impacts you as an investor, and what it means for retirement. Does it mess up the retirement plan that you have? Does it mean that you take a pension option somewhere or get more defensive? Or how do you find a balance that works for you and your family that doesn't give up on stocks? Because you'll be disappointed if you give up today just because the outlook today looks a little foggier and cloudier than it was 6 months ago. Again, 404-872-0750. Let's start with, Ryan says, let's go to Neville first in Atlanta. Neville, good morning. Welcome to the show. How can we help?
Hey, Wiz. How are you doing? One of my biggest concerns is people are saying that the market for 2016 is not going to be very good. And they say even if we get a stock market bounce, it'll probably bounce for 2 or 3 days, and then it's probably going to go further down. And I'm in a situation where I'm probably close to retirement, and I'm just wondering whether I should pull my money out of there and just smooth over the situation that way. I'd love to stay in the market, and I've been there for a long time. You were just talking about risk and that sort of thing, and I've been pretty good at handling this sort of risk, but just lately I'm just feeling a little more vulnerable.
Neville brings up an interesting point, and that it goes to the vulnerability as you get closer and closer to needing your money. And that's you're getting towards crunch time, and you're getting to the point where you're no longer going to be adding. I think it's easy when you're in your 30s and your 40s and you're really adding a lot of money to your investment portfolio. So when you see markets go down, yes, it isn't comforting because you see your values go net negative. But on the other side of the coin, you can rationalize by saying, hey, I'm at least buying at cheaper values. These come back. this is a good transaction for me and my family and for retirement. When Neville is closer to needing the money and has less, his tolerance for risk, that sounds like it's been pretty high, is starting to wane a little bit. Neville, if I go back to, let's go back to the last crisis, the last really serious crisis we went through, and we've had a lot of mini crises over the last 7 years, and we've had European debt crisis, we've had Greece, we've had plenty of issues after the great financial crisis. But if you go back to 07-08, and it's 7 some years ago, what did you do back then? Did you sidestep that, sell everything, then get back in? Did you ride through it and let your portfolio of all, what you're saying, 100% stocks recover? How did that period of time go for you?
Well, I pretty much rode it. I pretty much stayed the course at the time. And I remember right as the market was getting really close to the lows, I started pulling little chunks of money out. And when the market turned, I think when Doug Cass had mentioned that the market was likely to turn, when the market did turn, I started putting money back in. So I was fortunate to do that. I didn't wait. But that was a pretty scary time, and it lasted a long time. And that's the thing that worries me about this situation. I mean, is this going to last just a few days or a week, two maybe? Or are we talking about maybe a few, you know, maybe months of down on this market? Because we've been going down, you know, 1%, 2% a day, which is pretty significant for me anyway.
It is. It really is. And what Neville is referring to, Neville, what you're talking about here, we talked about in the 9 o'clock hour, which is recency. And recency can be, hey, the last week, the last month, the last year, or it can be something like, and I think this is a huge, huge part of sentiment today in the world that we live in, the recency of 2007. And 2008. Now, yeah, that was 7+ years ago, 8 years ago, but it still feels like it was yesterday. We're talking about the financial crisis right now in 2016, like it was yesterday. It's this trauma I think we've all gone through that, hey, what if that happens again? So we've got to remember that the Great Depression happened in the late 1920s and the 1930s. The great financial crisis, which is really the closest thing our economy has seen to the Great Depression, happened in 2007 and 2008. So it happened two periods of time over the course of 80 some years. Yet we think, hey, we could go right back into that, couldn't we? And I think that that is a mistake of recency. I think it's natural to think, well, hey, we could go right back to the 08 scenario. But I think that's really unlikely. I know that it feels that like that, but you've got to have a lot of speculative, bubble-oriented economics happening, like we saw in 2000 and really 5 and 6. We had this gigantic housing bubble, mortgage bubble, asset bubble that today doesn't look... there's always pockets of overvaluation, but today the market itself, Neville, isn't really that overvalued. I mean, especially with the correction that we're in today, we have the market's trading at 15.5 times earnings. Historically, that's not ultra cheap, but it's not expensive. So my thought here is that we get through this. Yes, we could drop another 5, maybe even another 10 from here, but we get through this. And you're only 63, so you still technically have, think about this, it feels like your horizon's short. Doesn't it? Hey, I'm going to retire, let's say, in 2 years. Well, that's a short horizon. But you're only 63. So let's say that you live to your 93, 83. That's still 2 decades away. You live to 93. That's 30 years from now. So I think we rationalize, hey, we're going into retirement fairly soon. My horizon's short. Well, not really. I think the answer for you, rather than trying to do the full timing, I think we're all so tempted to do, Neville. It's very tempting to say, you know what, why don't I just sell today? Let the dust settle, and then I can get back in. I think rather than doing that in mass, my approach to dealing with markets like this, again, this is my approach, right or wrong, this is just the way I deal with it, is that instead of just selling your entire portfolio, I think you're better off having some area that are non-risk assets that almost are counter to this difficult stock market. You can make arguments all day long that bonds aren't going to be a great investment over the next 5 or 10 years. Rates are so low, they can only go up. My bonds aren't going to really do a lot for me over the next 5 years. Well, that might be true, but the psychological component and the stabilizing component of having some really highly safe assets inside of the mix for you, I think goes a really long way. So for you, what you could do here is invest in some of these shorter term bond oriented high quality corporates or high quality treasury bonds or municipal bonds for that matter, and know that that portion of your portfolio is very stable relative to the swings and the throes of a full-blown 100% stock market-based portfolio. That's my answer here, Neville, is a balance on the buckets that we talked about earlier, not just cash, not just growth, but income, which is kind of bridges the gap somewhere in the middle for stability and interest over time. And to me, that balanced approach is what has worked, that I've seen work so well over many, many years. Even Benjamin Graham, many, many decades ago, wrote that one of his favorite ways to approach investing in markets, whether you're 30 years old or 80 years old, is to have half of your portfolio at all times, no matter what happens, in the stock side of the market, and the other half of your portfolio at all times in the bond side of the market. And I think there's an awful lot of merit to that approach. You're listening to Money Matters. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, it's easy to do so. You can go to my website. We're right here in Atlanta, in Sandy Springs. You can find me and the Money Matters team. You can either email us, we can talk on the phone, we can sit down and review what you've been doing as an investor. Are you in the right spot? Are there changes that need to be made? Or maybe you're in fine shape. Maybe there's some other problems. Maybe you're paying too much for the investments that you have. Maybe you're just not comfortable with your overall approach. Maybe you don't really even have a strategy and then you need to get one. That is a conversation that we can have. And you can have that conversation with me. You can have it with Ryan Ely. Any one of our team members, we can do that. You can go to my website, wesmoss.com, to find us, WESMOSS.com. There's a contact button on the left-hand side. That email form comes straight to me, and the team will get back to you within 24, certainly within 48 hours. More Money Matters straight ahead right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Hi, this is Scott Slade from Atlanta's Morning News and WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates 4 times an hour all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be back Monday morning, 4:30 to 9 for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Ryan Ely and I were just talking. I think he makes a good point about the lottery. There's a lottery, a lot of lottery do's and don'ts I've been talking about to WSB and WSB television this week. But $1.3 billion, does it really even matter? It's almost irrelevant. There's almost no do's and don'ts. You can't mess that up. You just can't even mess that up. Even the story about the woman in California who won, I think, $300 million, she spent $25 million on bail for her ex-boyfriend who is a gang member, and I've never heard this before, but evidently if you break bail, it doubles the next time. So bail was 500, then he broke it, went to a million, or broke parole, I don't know what the term is, then it went to 2 million, then it went to 4 million, and so now it's like $25 million in bail. I mean, but if you have $1 billion or $500 million after taxes, you still almost can't mess that one up. We'll do lotteries, do's and don'ts. I'll spend 2 minutes on it because I have a relatively interesting list to go over. Hey, let's go to the phones. We have time for one quick call. Let's go to Betty in Sandy Springs. Betty, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help?
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a quick question. I have both a Roth and a brokerage account, and I want to know what the tax implication is for putting I can't remember if it's a REIT or an MLP in my Roth. Should I do it? Should I not do it? I don't remember. I think there's a rule or something.
There is. You're thinking of if you have an MLP or any sort of limited partnership inside an IRA, you run the risk of something called UBIT, unrelated business income tax, that can happen because of the massive depreciation that happens on some of these pipeline companies, or really anything that's in a structure of an MLP. It doesn't have to be an energy company or pipeline, but most of them are. And if you have a certain level of taxation that is still, again, sheltered inside a Roth or a regular IRA, it can trigger UBIT. However, Betty, you've got to have an awful lot, and we've done the math on this. You've got to have, from my estimation, $150,000 to $200,000 just in MLP, individual MLP companies, in order to trigger enough income or enough in dividends for UBIT, or enough taxation to trigger UBIT. So if you have a few MLPs and they're $10,000 and $20,000 and $50,000, you're still way under the limit and don't have to worry about it at all.
I can have MLPs in a Roth.
And you absolutely can. To make it even simpler, to never have to worry about it, you can own those MLPs in an ETF, like AMJ, or it's really an ETN, Betty, AMJ or MLPI, which are baskets, or effectively you're owning a segment of the MLP market, and you don't have to worry about specific K-1s, even though you don't have to worry about that in an IRA anyway. An ETF or an ETN will eliminate the worry of UBIT. But the answer to answer your question, Betty, you can own them in an IRA or a Roth. You are listening to Money Matters. We have plenty of calls, or lots of calls straight ahead, 404-872-0750. More Money Matters straight ahead right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. We'll cover breaking news, Kirk Miller's weather, and traffic red alerts throughout the weekend. And the Southeast's largest news team is here for you first thing Monday morning when you head back to work. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now back to Wes Moss and the money and investing advice you need.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters right here on WSB Radio. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Stocks dropped 6% in worst ever year opening. Comforting headline. Big bear on the cover of Barron's, sitting in an armchair, giving you the evil eye. That's selling newspapers. So does China, what's the fault? Whose fault is it that the market dropped this week? And I don't know if fault is the right word when it comes to markets, or what's the culprit? Who can we blame this on? You're going to hear it blamed on China. You'll hear it blamed on China, and then that rolls over to, or that fear of slower growth gets exported to lots of other areas. Oil is one of the main variables that gets hit. Slow China means they import less oil. They utilize less oil. Oil price continues to drop. Oil price continues to drop. The drop. The chain reaction is that oil companies can't make any profit. They continue to lose money. It's a huge sector of our economy and the global economy. Hence, the entire market itself continues to struggle. Couple of thoughts about China. U.S. imports more from China than anybody else. We import, just in the first 11 months of last year, $450 billion. What do we import from them? We import about $100 billion from to China, about $106 billion. So we import, call it over a half a trillion. We export to them about $106 billion. So is it a bad thing? Because we're buying more from them than they are from us. A cheaper yuan, their currency, makes things even cheaper for us. So we actually, that in itself isn't necessarily a bad thing. Then you have China, which has the stock market is an adolescent stock market. It's just young. It hasn't figured things out yet. They put in new circuit breakers this week. It actually exacerbated the problem in the market. It made the market trade so violently that it closed after 30 minutes on Thursday. And they're just still figuring things out in China. But the fall in oil, which again is tangential to, hey, slow China means low oil prices or lower oil prices, the fall in oil seems to have no bottom. But remember, low oil doesn't cause recessions. It just doesn't. We've been over this now the last couple of weeks. I think it's important to continue to reiterate this, but gas is not $4 anymore. It's $1.99. It's the lowest since 2009. It's going to continue to go lower. And the reason that gasoline is dropping is not because of slower demand. Consumption in the globally is growing at over 4% a year. Fossil fuel consumption, oil consumption growing over 4% a year. It's the supply that's crushing the price. It's the supply that has gone through the roof because of horizontal fracking that has just technologically exploded how easy it is to find oil. And the supply growing at 6.5% relative to 4% growth or 4.5% for demand crushes the price. And that's the cycle we're in right now. Lower oil prices does actually leads to even more consumption. We right now, growth in global oil demand is at a five-year high. So demand is higher than it's been in 5 years, yet oil prices continue to drop. U.S. drivers. So gas is cheaper. What do we do more? On the margin, do we take a bus? Do we fly? It's pretty cheap to drive, honey. Let's just drive. Well, we set a record last year. First 11 months of the year, we drove 2.6 billion miles in America. That's the most we've ever driven on record. So it's not a demand issue. I think that you continue to see what's happening with oil. We think that, hey, China's slowing down and oil prices continue to plummet. That just means that, hey, nobody's using gas anymore. We're not using fossil fuels anymore. That's not the case at all. The opposite is true. We're actually expanding global consumption, expanding global demand at really twice the rate we were a couple years ago. So it's not a demand issue right now. And China growing at 5 or 6%, yes, it's down from 10, 11%, but it's also not as though they're going into this great recession. It's just the adjustment from them going from a full-on manufacturing economy to a more consumer-based economy. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. Michael joins us from Riverdale. Good morning, Michael. Welcome to Money Matters. How can we help, my friend?
Hey, Wes. How are you doing today?
Good. What's going on?
Great. I listen to your show quite a bit, not every Sunday because I travel a lot.
I'll give you a pass on the not every Sunday. It's okay.
Okay. But just so you know, you forgot to blame one other group, the Illuminati.
The Illuminati. So there's even more of a, there's a longer list than that, Michael, but I only have so much time here on the show.
Yeah. But anyways, you touched upon a lot of it on my question when you were talking to Neville about, you know, going in and out of the market. I guess you would call it borderline timing it. But what are the real dangers of, you know, trying to sell at when the market's between 17.5 and 17.7 and then buying it, you know, when it goes down to 16.5 to 16.7? What are the real dangers of that?
Well, you remind me, the first thing that comes to my mind is, do you remember the commercial? I don't know if this still runs anymore. There used to be a commercial on the financial channels. I think it was CNBC, maybe Bloomberg, and it was for channeling stocks. There were two young guys in a cubicle talking about the stock market, and this one of them drew this squiggly line, effectively a line from the lower left of the screen to the upper right, cyclically though, so up and down and up and down, ultimately to the upper right. And he said, "Well, if we're channeling stocks, it's really simple. We just buy here and then we sell when it gets here. We'll buy when it dips down and then we'll sell when it gets here, and then we'll buy again when it dips down," making it seem as though you can just, hey, channeling stocks, just buy it when it's low, sell it when it's high, and just do that over and over and over again and make this exponential amount of money. And it seems so simple, doesn't it? Why don't we just do that? It's just not, though. And if you think about it, if it was that simple, you'd have hedge funds and mutual funds that are shutting down, by the way, at a record pace over the last year. You would see hedge funds consistently outperforming the market. And what's the reality, Michael? They don't. So it might seem, and we were just talking about this earlier in the show, something called recency. It's a human behavior of, and we were talking about neuroeconomics today, that we think because the market was in a range over the last year and it hit 18,000 and then it sold back down to 16.5 and then it goes back to 18, it goes back to 16.5. Well, that's a simple pattern. Well, why don't we just buy when it gets to 16.5 and sell every time it gets to 18,000? That seems simple enough. But the minute, Michael, that seems so evident, and it seems as though that's kind of a no-brainer, well, that'll work, is the minute it stops working. And that's the reality of every time the market creates a pattern and it fools us into thinking that's going to be the continued pattern, guess when the pattern stops? Then. The minute you try to pick up that pattern, and it might work for another 6 months, it might work for another year for you, but it doesn't just continue to do that. Because the minute the pattern becomes overly evident, then everybody starts doing it and the pattern unwinds. And that is part of the mechanics of this market. So what's the danger in it? Well, you know, I guess last week, I think we talked about this last week. Let me see if I have my notes on this. But remember market timing. Remember how difficult it is to time these markets. And remember, if you miss just a couple of days, what it does to your returns. If we go back to the timing of or missing the best days in the market over a 20 or 30 year period, and I want to say the study that I talked about a couple weeks ago was that, oh, here we go. This is if we were to miss just a few days. I think that we made up a Dr. Seuss quote. If Dr. Seuss were to be a market technician, he would have said, miss just a few days here and there and your returns. Oh, no, I did it backwards. Miss just a few days there and here. This is Dr. Seuss. Miss just a few days there and here, and your returns will disappear. Why? Because good days in the market are concentrated in just a few per year. So you miss a few, and the impact on your overall returns is dramatic. 1995 to 2014, it's 20 years. 5,036 trading days. Total annualized return, if you were to be invested the entire time, good days, bad days, all the way through, annualized 9.8%. 100 grand turns into 650,000. You miss just five days out of 5,036. Your return drops from 9.8 all the way down to about 7.5. So instead of 100 turning into 650, 100,000 turns into 430. You miss 10 days, your 9% drops to 6. You miss 20 days, 20 of the best days out of 5,036, your returns drop from 9.8% all the way down to 3.6. And if you miss 40 days out of 5,036, 40 of the best days, what happens? Well, you actually go negative. You go negative 0.5% per year. In a period of time, over that entire 20-year period, markets average close to 10. That's dangerous, in my opinion. To me, that's the danger, is that you find a pattern, you think you found a pattern, and then it unravels on you. And then you end up with every other market timer that, whether you're an amateur or a professional, and we've seen professionals do that this year, and over last year, 2015, they just gave up. They just stopped operating because their timing, all their algorithms in the world, servers as big as this building, did not end up working. So you've got to understand that even though it looks on the surface that it's easy to do, ultimately it's the very thing that usually ruins people's investment returns. Now, let's go back to oil and recessions. We were talking about China, we're talking about oil. If you go back to all the way back to 1945, and this is, I think, critical here, because remember, a strong economy, or at least an okay economy that can produce earnings that are slowly growing again, estimates are for close to 8% this year for the S&P 500 for earnings, which can lead to a market that does well. A lot of variables, obviously, but the question is, does, when oil is going down, is that in itself scary enough to have a ripple effect that causes a recession? Well, the answer is that, let's go back all the way to 1945 until now, 70 years of data, what we see over the course of history, there just is not evidence, arguably ever, of a decline in oil prices that leads to a recession. Oil price increases frequently cause recessions, but not the other way around. 1974, oil spiked, boom, recession 74-75. 1979, oil spiked, boom, recession 1980. 1989 and 1990, oil spiked. Then what did we get? A 1991 recession. Oil climbed in 07 and peaked in 07, and then what happened? The great financial crisis and recession in 08 and 09. That's not where we are today. Falling oil means gas has been cut in half, $4 down to $2. 6 months it takes, though, for consumers to really believe it. And it takes another year for that money to start really getting spent and add to consumer spending and add to GDP growth. So 2016, we could get a half to three quarters of a percent in overall economic growth at GDP from the consumer getting a gas price cut. Takes time to play out. If you want to find me and the Money Matters team, it's easy to do so. We're right here in Atlanta, in Sandy Springs. You can go to my website, wesmoss.com. Left-hand side, there's a contact button. Those emails come straight to me and the Money Matters team. If you want to get a second opinion on what your strat, how you are set up for 2016, we're happy to go through that with you. If you feel like you're at a crossroads and you might need to change what you're doing, then we're happy to talk that through. We're, of course, very oriented towards income investing, dividends, interest, distributions. They add up to a portfolio yield. Portfolio yield gives you a steady cash flow throughout the year. Doesn't mean you don't have some volatility underlying, but we're believers in that that is a good long-term course of action or strategy over time. And we're happy to talk that through with you and your family. Again, you can just go to wesmoss.com or email me radio@yourwealth, Y-O-U-R, wealth. Straight ahead, more Money Matters right here on News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.
Hi, this is Scott Slade from Atlanta's Morning News and WSB. Our 24-hour news center delivers updates four times an hour all weekend. Depend on it. We'll be back Monday morning, 4:30 to 9 for breaking news and traffic and weather every 6 minutes. News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB. Now, here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, it's jam.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. In another volatile week, just remember that just because we started the year on a rough note doesn't mean the entire year is going to be a disaster. Yes, bad week, maybe even a bad month. But if you look historically, there's a correlation to the positive. You have a really good first week. There's a more better than 50% chance that you have a good year. And of course, you've heard as January goes, so goes the year. A good January leads 70% of the time, 75% of the time to a strong annual calendar year. The data is mixed on bad first weeks. So as far as Bespoke or FactSet is something that I read this weekend, as far as the first week is concerned, just because it's a bad week, it's still about a 50-50 proposition whether you have a good year or a bad year economically. So I'm not a huge believer in these stock almanac patterns that I'll cite them often because they're interesting to understand market history, and I love market history, but they're really just context, because we have years where the Chinese economy goes from 10% growth to 6. That's what really matters. We have oil prices that drop from 100 to 35. That's what really matters. Not what happened in a similar scenario or a market because we had a bad week in 2016. We're going to relate that to a bad week in 1945. It's nice to try to draw a comparison, but we've got to look at current economic variables and factors. That's what really matters. What's happening in Washington? What's happening in the election? What's happening in China? What's happening with housing, consumer spending, and interest rates, and manufacturing, and employment, and earnings? You name it. That's the symphony of economic data. That's the key. And we'll continue to monitor that. We'll continue to talk about it. We'll continue to try to keep you on a solid, rational investing track. That's what matters over time. It's a long, long, arduous journey that we're all on together, to be able to get to a point where we can stop working and we can be able to retire in the sense that we no longer have to work. We can choose to do what we want to do. If we don't want to work, we don't have to. That's the whole key to what we're trying to do here at Money Matters. You can retire sooner than you think. It's the name of my book, Five Money Secrets, Happiest Retirees. That's what we're operating around. That's the theme here. Enjoy the rest of this week. Want to find me and the Money Matters team? Easy to do so. Go to wesmoss.com. The contact button comes straight to me and our team. We're happy to talk. We're here in Atlanta, here in Sandy Springs. Stay tuned. Straight ahead, news, weather, traffic. Then Adam Goldfein right here, News 95.5 at AM 750 WSB.
Having a heart attack.
Put the heel of your hand in the center of his chest, right between the nipples. One, two, three.
Young lady, she's breathing.